Welcome to the Brevard Christian Church Podcast. Today we learn about how even suffering can be a blessing if we draw closer to God in times of difficulty. Without God, there are no answers for suffering. In other words, when life gets hard, let's make it our goal to get closer to God. Enjoy.
Would you pray with me, please? Our gracious Heavenly Father, it's such a privilege to call you our Father, and we realize that we can do that because of what Jesus has done for us. We don't just look at the past and what Jesus has done. We're grateful for what he is doing in and through us as your people. God, I really do thank you for being the God of all comfort. You give us perspective for the good things that we experience in life, but you also give us the strength for the difficult things that we face. I pray that we'll gain more perspective, more encouragement to face the challenges because we've been together today in your word. Would you please bless us to that end, I pray in Jesus' name. We're up to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. If you want to open your Bibles and find that, we're going to be looking at some of the verses right in the middle of the 12th chapter a little bit later, but before we get to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, I want to kind of go to the Old Testament, kind of set the stage, because many of these things that we've been seeing as we go through 2 Corinthians, they're not just one-off, they're not just some topic that the Bible hits one time. They're recurring themes that God hits in so many different ways, and the one that we're going to be talking about today is just huge. It's huge not just from a biblical perspective, it's also huge from a everyday life experience perspective. In fact, this is the topic that we're going to be talking about today, is the number one reason why people walk away from God. It is the number one reason why people who say they don't believe in God give as to why they don't believe in God. And it's also the number one reason why a lot of Christians actually grow and become stronger in their faith. So I don't think we can overestimate the importance of what we're going to be talking about today, because what we're going to be talking about today is bad things happen. They just do. I'm going to start in the Old Testament, however. In the Old Testament, we need a character by the name of Jacob. You remember the meaning of the name Jacob? Jacob, he who grasps the heel. He's grasping the heel of his brother at birth, right? But the word literally means he who grasps the heel, or he who tricks somebody else or trips somebody else up, or he who is a con man who tries to take advantage of somebody else. And he really lived up to that name most of his life, but his name got changed. You remember what his name got changed to? He used to be Jacob, then he became, you are allowed to talk, by the way. He became Israel. And when did his name get changed? That one night when he's coming back home, he's scared to death, and he meets what he thinks is a person. Turns out it's more than a person. It's a physical manifestation with God, and he wrestles with them all night long. And as a result of that wrestling match, his name gets changed from Jacob to Israel. And Israel means he who wrestles with God. Now, I don't know if you've given this much thought, but I have frequently come back to this and just scratched my head because to call somebody he who wrestles with God, at one level, is it just to remember that one night? I don't think so. I think it is to remember that night, but I think there's so much more. And the reason I think there's so much more is from this point forward, all of his sons, remember the 12 tribes? They're called the 12 tribes of Israel. In fact, the nation's going to be called the nation of Israel. You get to the New Testament in Galatians, the third chapter. You and I who are Christians, in fact, not just Galatians chapter 3, Galatians chapter 6, we are the new Israel. We're part of Israel as God's people today. Well, what does that mean? It means throughout all Old Testament history, God's people were called, if you understood the Hebrew language, these are my people. These are the people who wrestle with God. That's what I call it. You know what he calls us today? We are the people, we are the new people who wrestle with God. Well, there's an awful lot to that, but at least one of the things involved in wrestling with God is the fact that he's God and we're not. I know this is a very basic level, but would you just go through these steps with me? The very fact that he's God and we're not means there's going to be some things, probably a whole lot of things, that he's going to do or work in our lives or just do in other people's lives we're not going to get. We don't get it because we're not God. But some of the stuff just doesn't make any sense to us, so we wrestle with it. And of course, we want to better understand, we want to better know, and we want to grow in our understanding. But we will never be God. So we're always in this relationship going to have at least a degree of wrestling. And this is demonstrated exceedingly well in one of his sons. In fact, again, if you look at the Old Testament, you look at the book of Genesis, there is like a third of the book of Genesis. It takes up chapter after chapter after chapter, the story of one of his sons, his son named Joseph. You know this story. The favored son, he gave him that special coat, right? And as a result of getting that special coat, all his brothers hated him. In fact, he sends Joseph out to find where his brothers are to check up on them and bring back a report. And a lot of times the reports weren't good. But this time he finds him in Dothan. And when he comes and approaches his brothers see him from a distance. And they say, here comes that dreamer. Okay, back up just a little bit. He had dreams. And this is probably not the smartest thing for a young guy to do. If you look good in the dream and somebody else looks bad, it's probably not really wise to tell somebody else who looked bad in your dream about your dream, right? So he's probably not really sensitive as far as social. He probably doesn't read the room well, right? Can I say it that way? But other than that, look at the response that the brothers gave him when they saw him coming in the distance, wearing that robe that shows that he's dad's favorite. They say to themselves, let's just kill him. Wow, you get a sense at this point in reading the story that it's over the top. It's not just little sibling rivalry here. The animosity has grown to the point they seriously, they're not just saying this, they seriously want to kill him, but they talk amongst themselves and they come to the conclusion, hey, let's not get blood on our hands. So they throw him in a pit, they take that coat off. They can't stand to see that coat. Ishmaelite traders come along, and as they come along, again, somebody has the idea, hey, let's just sell him. He's as good as dead to us. We've gotten rid of him, but we don't have blood on our own hands. In fact, all the blood we're going to have is blood we're going to put on his coat. We're going to take this coat back to dad, and dad's going to see the coat. He's going to come to the conclusion, oh, some wild animal killed my son. That's the exact conclusion they wanted him to come to. So Joseph's out of the picture as far as they're concerned. Bible tells us Joseph is 17 years old when this happens, by the way. I don't know about you, I think that's a very important perspective here because we all thought clearly when we were 17, didn't we? At 17 years of age, here he is. He probably didn't read the room well as far as his relationship with his brothers go. But other than that, we read of no major sins in his life, no major flaws, other than maybe not be sensitive to relationships, right? Other than that, that's it. And he gets sold into slavery. I'm saying this simply because as a teenager, there as a slave in a foreign land, he gets purchased by a guy named Potiphar. He's going to work in Potiphar's household. What do you think he's thinking? The Bible doesn't give us a lot of details here, but I think it's pretty safe to assume he's either scratching his head or he's praying those kind of prayers, saying something to the effect, God, why? What did I ever do to deserve this? I just don't understand. In other words, I think we're starting to see a picture develop of somebody who's Israel. He's wrestling with God. He's trying to understand, why do I have to go through things like this? And by the way, in case I forget to say it a little bit later, he's 17 years old. The Bible points that out. He doesn't come out the other side of this until he's in his 30s. You know, it's enough when you're an old guy like me to have to experience 15 years of drought or something like that. But in your teenage years, your 20s, man, that many years seems like double a lifetime, right? So there he is. He's working in Potiphar's house. And I think, again, we learned something extremely important that the Bible's trying to emphasize. The Bible, I think, is emphasizing so many things. I want us to really look at the big picture here, but don't miss this. God never promised you wouldn't get sold into slavery. What did God promise? Even though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I'm with you. Do you see the difference here? God did not promise to remove the valley of the shadow of death for those who follow him. He promised to be with us. So here's Joseph in slavery working for a guy named Potiphar who purchased him to work as a slave. And God is with him and God is blessing what he does. And by the way, even though I think it's safe to assume Joseph didn't have the faintest idea of what's really going on, he still was faithful to God. How do we know that? Because there's this temptation brewing. You remember the story. It's Potiphar's wife. She starts flirting with him at first, and then she gets to the point where she wants to have an affair with Joseph, and Joseph says to her, listen, I can't do that. I can't do that because my master has entrusted me with everything in his household, and by the way, God is blessing everything that he's doing, but he's still a slave. Don't forget that. God is blessing everything he's doing, but he says to her, I can't do this and sin against my master, nor can I sin against God. Can't tell you how much I appreciate that. In the midst of all this stuff that no doubt he didn't understand, he still knew what God required, and he wanted to do that. How many times have people said to themselves, well, God let me down, I'm just going to do it my way? You can't do it your way and expect a blessing or expect to succeed. And I'm not just talking about personal success. Be able to live life well, you have to live it God's way, even in the times where you don't understand, even during the times when you're wrestling. So here he is in Potiphar's house. She keeps approaching him until one day everybody's out of the house except there she is with Joseph. Only the two of them. So she aggressively approaches him this time. She wants to take him to bed, but he won't do that. And so he leaves his coat behind. She grabs hold of his coat. He runs out of the house to get out of the situation. And she takes that coat. Isn't this interesting? The first coat that he had is dipped in blood to tell the lie that he died when he really didn't lie. The second coat is used to frame him for rape that he never committed. And that's exactly the story that she tells her husband. And here he goes from slavery into the dungeon. So again, at least he's scratching his head, or maybe even more. God, why? What have I done? I've been faithful. I remain true to you. And it's gone from really bad to even worse. While he's in prison, what happens to him? Well, the Bible tells us God is with him. Again, he doesn't remove the prison. He doesn't remove the valley of the shadow of death. But he goes with us through those times. So here's Joseph. He's in the prison, and he's being faithful to God, and the guy who's in charge of the prison realizes, boy, the more I let this guy take care of things, better things go. Blessing everything, but he's still in prison. He's still a slave, but he meets two people while he's in prison. Remember this? He meets the baker, and he meets the cupbearer, who both work for Pharaoh. He's learning about Pharaoh before he ever goes in Pharaoh's presence, right? By the way, he's also probably thinking to himself, you know what? I've learned a lot of management skills. I've learned how to administer, you know, a large family. I've learned how to take care of a big prison. Yeah, is that worth, you know, being sold into slavery? You know, how in the world can God use it? God is going to use this. He probably doesn't see any of it at this point in his life. Anyway, he meets these two guys. They have their dreams, and he interprets the dreams for them. Remember the cupbearer? He has these three big clusters of grape. He squeezes them to a cup. And he puts it in Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph says those three clusters, that represents 3 days. In 3 days, you're going to be returned to your job. Well, the baker hears that, and he thinks, well, interpret my dream. My dream, I had these three baskets on my head, and the birds came, and they ate. Oh, yeah, that means 3 baskets, 3 days. In 3 days, the bird's going to be eating your flesh because your body's going to be impaled. You're going to be dead. You know, it's kind of like, and guess what happened? 3 days, he's dead. 3 days, the other guy is back working for the gate. And here's what Joseph said. He said, please remember me. Oh, man. I know I don't have time to go into these details, but I love this because Joseph isn't just in slavery. He isn't just patiently, okay, God, I trust you. He's also doing what he can to get out. Please remember me while I'm here. You know, wherever you are, there you are, and you're there to represent God. But if you can get out, get out. And so he says, please remember me. I was unjustly sent here. I shouldn't have been a slave in the first place. He tells him his story, but when the cupbearer returns to Pharaoh, he forgets all about Joseph. More time passes till Pharaoh has some dreams. Remember the two dreams? He has the seven big fat cows come out of the Nile River, and then the seven skinny cows come out of the Nile River, and the seven skinny cows eat up the fat cows, and yet they remain skinny. And then he sees the seven big plump heads of grain, and then the seven scorched heads of grain, the scorched heads of grain eat up the plump ones, and they still remain scorched and like they're almost not there. And he can't figure it out. Nobody can tell him what the dreams mean. And then the cupbearer remembers, oh, yeah, I know this guy who can interpret dreams. So they finally bring him out of prison. How much time has passed here? He is in his 30s now. They bring him in the presence of Pharaoh, and he interprets the dreams for him. He says, listen, two dreams, it's really one message. The seven plump heads of grain, the seven fat cows, there's going to be 7 years where the crops come in. Man, you're going to have more crops than you've ever experienced before. It's going to be bumper crops. You know, it's going to be great. But then there's going to be 7 years of famine. And it's going to be so bad that the 7 years of famine are going to eat up. Just like the skinny cows ate up the fat cows and they remain skinny. They're going to eat up all the produce that you had during the 7 years of the bumper crops. And you're going to forget how good it was. It's going to be that bad. So he says, that's what the dream means. The Lord's telling you what's going to happen in the future. So here's my advice. During those 7 good years, why don't you set aside, why don't you set somebody aside to administer, setting aside all the extra grain so you're prepared for the 7 bad years? And Pharaoh says to himself, he says, and by the way, he says to all the people around him, he says, I think that's a great plan, and I think this is the guy. Okay, finally in this story, as we're reading through the book of Genesis, we see, okay, now it starts to make sense. Joseph is elevated to the second most powerful person in Egypt, which makes him the second most powerful person on the planet at that time. And in this position, God is going to work through Joseph to literally save the world. He's going to keep him alive during this worldwide famine. But in particular, he's going to save a group of people back up in Canaan. His family who first come down and don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. He's going to keep them alive. Not only is he going to keep them alive, what else does he do? He gets them out of the land of Canaan and he brings them down to the land of Egypt. Why is that significant? It's not just the food to keep them alive. He gets them down to the land of Egypt because he told Abraham years before that I can't give my people a land by wiping out people who don't deserve to be wiped out. Before they ever get the promised land, they need to be away. How long? It's going to take 400 years. Why does it take so long? Because here's what the Bible says. Here's what God said to Abraham. The iniquity of the Canaanite is not great enough yet. I know you know this, but the Bible tells us God didn't indiscriminately go in and wipe people out just so he could give some land to his own people. He waited until the point where those people needed to be punished. And so they were not only taking a land for themselves, they were also carrying out God's judgment on a people that needed to be judged. But in the meantime, they needed a place to stay. And so God gets them down to Egypt, and he keeps them alive, and he keeps the world alive. How does he do that? Because he's got the right man in the right place. And how did he get that right man in the right place? Because he was in a place where he knew some people who knew Pharaoh. And how did he get to that place where he knew some people who knew Pharaoh? Because he ended up in a prison. And how did he get to that prison? Because he was falsely charged for rape. And how did he get falsely charged for rape? Because he was purchased by a guy who was the captain of the guard for Pharaoh. And how did he get purchased by this guy who was captain of the guard for Pharaoh? Because he was sold into slavery. And how did he get sold into slavery? He got sold into slavery by his brothers. In fact, here's the way Joseph himself says it in chapter 50 of the book of Genesis. When he finally reveals himself to his brothers and he's talking to them, he says, you meant it for evil. God used it for good. Okay, that's the story we know. We know that story, right? But how many times do we look at our own life and look at the messes and look at the difficulties and say, you know what? I know a lot of people mean harm, but God takes this very thing I'm going through and he shapes it and makes it into something good. Listen to what the Apostle Paul says. Are you ready for this? It's in chapter 12, 2 Corinthians. I'm going to start reading in verse 7. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7. It says, because of these surpassing great revelations, he just, in the first several verses, talked about some just marvelous experiences that he was able to experience as an apostle. And he says, surpassingly great these things were. But because of them, therefore, in order to keep me from becoming conceited, God obviously knew something about Paul, and he knew that he needed this. In order to keep me from becoming conceited, he said, I was given a thorn in my flesh. What does that mean? Thorn is something you don't like. Flesh represents your body. He doesn't specifically tell us what it is, but there was something wrong with his body, and it hurt. He calls it the thorn in the flesh. He says, a messenger of Satan to torment me. By the way, I think that's really significant because sometimes it can actually be from Satan. It can actually be an evil thing in your life. And you can look at it and say, I know this is not good because you can clearly identify it. It's from Satan. It's really bad. Yeah, God can use even that stuff. Let me keep reading. He says, I was given a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest in me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in my weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. There's always going to be difficulties that we face. And you can look at the difficulties, and you can be so upset you can walk away from God. Or you can wrestle with the difficulties, and you can grow closer to God. And I would just like you to think about two really big reasons why you ought to do the latter, why your difficulties ought to bring you closer to God. I mean, these are huge reasons. Again, I apologize. I don't have time to go into a lot of stuff, but I'm telling you, these answers that the Bible gives us, they are the only answers anybody has for the problem of evil. You leave God alone, you've got no answer. But here, there are more than these two answers, but here are the two big ones. Number one, it's the love of God. Number two, it's the growth of man, the growth of you and me. Let me try to explain this. How do difficulties demonstrate the love of God? Let's go through this sequentially. Before you can have a loving relationship with anybody, you have to have free will, right? Before you can have a loving relationship with anybody, you have to have free will. It's important to understand this before we move any further. If you tie somebody to the railroad tracks and say, I'm not going to untie you until you say you love me, who's the silly person here? The person who believes that they really love you because you tied them to the railroad? You know, it's kind of like putting a gun to somebody's head and say, you like me, don't you? Right? Insofar as you coerce somebody, insofar as you remove their free will and they don't have a choice, insofar as you have done that, you really don't know if they love you or not. Because to have real love, you have to have free will. That's one of the reasons why God gave us free will. According to Acts chapter 2, verse 40, there are a bunch of these, but in Acts chapter 2, verse 40, Peter's preaching on the day of Pentecost, and it says there, it's a summary verse, it says, with many other words, Peter, reasoning with them, with many other words, he pleaded with them, he said, save yourselves from this corrupt generation. Well, God's the one who saves us. What does he mean when he says, save yourselves from this corrupt generation? Because the message of the Bible is, yes, God's the only one who can save us, but God gave you a choice. You accept that or not. You can accept or reject. You have free will. Why in the world would God want to give us choices in life? Why in the world does he give us this free will? Because he wants to have a loving relationship with us. You cannot have a real loving relationship without free will. I don't have time. I need to move on. You don't really have free will unless you're able to make choices, real choices with real consequences. Does this make sense? You don't really have a free will unless you can make real choices with real consequences. I have four children. They're all grown now, but my children, when they were growing up in our household, you can probably tell, we loved to go out to eat. And so every time there was a birthday or a spiritual birthday or an adoption day or any other day that we wanted to celebrate, we would look at the person who had the birthday or whatever the day was, and we'd say, okay, it's your day. You get to choose where we're going to eat. Well, my youngest daughter, if she's here, I apologize in advance, but my youngest daughter, her name's Jacinth. We always called her Jazzy. When she was little, I'd always say to her on her special day, okay, Jazzy, it's your special day. We get to go eat wherever you want to go eat. And I'd look at her, and I knew what she was going to say. You know, she was going to say, let's go to McDonald's so I can have a Happy Meal. And I'd look at her with a big smile on my face and say, well, we can't go to McDonald's, but we can go anywhere else. You know, you get to choose, it's your day. McDonald's is off the list, but you get to choose. And so she, in her little mind at that time, would say, well, you know, well, I guess Burger King's kind of like McDonald's. And I'd say, well, no, we're not going to Burger King either. It's not Burger King, it's not, but anywhere you want to go, it's your day, it's a special day. And she'd go three or four, and I'd say, no, but it's your day. You get, until she picked someplace like Pizza Hut, someplace I wanted to go, right? And when she picked Pizza Hut, I would turn to the rest of the family and say, hey, Jazzy chose Pizza Hut today. We're going to Pizza Hut. And she would smile when she was little. She would smile and, yeah, aren't I great? I chose Pizza Hut. It didn't take very many years where she would, wait a minute. You know, she figured out, if I don't really get to choose, then I didn't have a choice, did I? You see, it just illustrates in my mind this extremely important principle. If you have free will, it means you get to make real choices with consequences. And sometimes those consequences are consequences and choices that other people don't like. Right? Here's the classic illustration. Somebody makes the decision to drink and get behind the wheel. They don't have total control of the car. They cross the center line. They ran into a car. Family going to a Bible study. Innocent people get hurt. And a lot of people say to themselves, why? I don't mean to make light of things like this. But people grapple with this and they say, why? And I know it's not real satisfying. I know it's a wrestling thing, but it does make sense. I'll tell you why. Because people can make stupid choices. And why do people make stupid choices? They make stupid choices because they have the ability to make choices. And why in the world do they have the ability to make choices? Because God decided to make us that way. And why did God decide to make us that way? Because this loving relationship thing was that important to God. Listen, I got to push this a little bit further because too many times people look at this and they say, well, that explains a lot of the evil in the world, but there's so many things. There's natural disasters. There's terrible famines. There's all sorts of things that happen in the world. That doesn't explain at all. Listen, I realize there's a lot involved here, but would you expand your thinking just a little bit? There was a guy by the name of Jeff Vines. Years ago, I got to hear him in person, and he had just gotten off the mission field. He was working at a church in Georgia at that time, but he had been working as a missionary in Central Africa. And during that time, he says, one of his great frustrations was there'd be some terrible famine, and he'd come back home, and he'd talk to the churches, and they'd say, why aren't you feeding those kids? We sent all this money. We've sent all this grain. And in frustration, he would say, listen, the United States of America by itself, let alone what Europe and all the other nations said, the United States of America has sent enough food to feed all these people 10 times over. But all the grain is sitting in warehouses, guarded by the army, controlled by the dictator, who's using the food as a weapon to control the people. It's not because there's not enough food. It's because some bad person is making bad choices and people are getting hurt because of it. Listen, in the book of Job, the first two chapters, the Bible also tells us we're not the only creatures that God created with a free will. There are spiritual creatures that are involved in Job's life. And you remember how they're involved in Job's life? There's what we would call natural disasters. In fact, there's even physical illness. I am not saying every natural disaster and every illness comes from Satan, but I am saying that some of it could be a result of spiritual forces. The Bible very clearly endorses that idea. In fact, the Bible also tells us in Romans the 8th chapter that creation itself, you talk about natural disasters, creation itself does not operate the way God created it to operate. Why? Because the impact that sin has on this world. Here's the way it says it in Romans chapter 8. It says creation itself groans because it's not functioning the way it was meant to. It all ultimately, eventually, gets back to a lot of choices that were made by spiritual beings and by us as sin comes into the world. And the question again comes to the mind, well, then why did God let us have these choices? Because he was willing to pay that price to have a loving relationship with you and me. Do you see how big this love thing is to God? And if you're saying to yourself, wow, that's a huge price to pay. Please don't forget this. If this life were the only life there was, you might have a point. But this is not the only life. There's an eternity coming. You just have to have a life like this, where people get to make free will choices before you can have a life where there's perfect love and no sin. Does that make sense? Boy, I hope it does, because there's one more thing I've got to say. There's so many answers to this. The love of God is the big one. But the growth of man's another one. The growth of man. Did I tell you about the Bycroft? I bet you I already told you about Bycroft's. My brother is involved in the ministry. He had a friend he went to Bible college with. His name was Bycroft. He worked out in the Midwest. I don't think it was Iowa, but it was somewhere in the Midwest. He was preaching at a church out there, and one of the people he was visiting, one of his farmers, he was a farmer, and he was a member of the congregation, and he was visiting that day, and the farmer said, hey, I'd love to visit with you, but I gotta do some chores. Can you come along with me? And Bycroft went with him, and he said, well, what are we doing today? And he says, we're going to go scare some trees. I'd never heard of that before. You know, how do you do that? Do you tiptoe up to the tree and say, boo? You know, have you heard this before? Do you know how to scare a tree? I didn't know this. How do you scare trees? Well, farmers figured out a long time ago, when a tree's growing, And if it's a fruit tree and it's not producing much fruit or it doesn't seem to be doing well, one of the best things the farmer can do after they know it's fertilized and taken care of and things like that, one of the best things the farmer can do is go up to that tree. Can you picture this tree that the trunk's not that big yet, maybe 15, 20-foot tree? Go up to that tree and grab a hold of that tree and just rip it back and forth and violently deal with that tree as though you're trying to rip it out of the ground. And after you've wrestled with the tree for a while and ripped it back and forth, farmer stood back and said, well, I think we scared that one good enough. Let's go scare another tree. He goes on another tree. You know what the farmers figured out? That when you do that tree, it's one of the best things that can happen to that tree. It causes the roots to go out a little bit further, bring in a little bit more nutrients, and it actually helps the tree to grow. This guy by the name of Richards, he worked his whole life, professional life, at the San Diego Zoo. Also a committed Christian, he wrote a book about his experience because so many things he saw in the animal kingdom taught him so many things that the Bible already taught him, helped illustrate what the Bible already taught him. And one of the stories he wrote about in there, I don't think I'll ever forget this. He talks about how giraffes give birth. I don't know if you know this. I hadn't the faintest idea. You know, a lot of animals, big animals, they give birth, they lay down. Of all the animals on the planet, I would think a giraffe would want to lay down. They don't. When a baby giraffe comes out, you know the first experience the baby giraffe has in this world? It's called a crash landing. Can you picture in your mind how tall the giraffe is? Baby giraffe comes out, first thing that happens is, bam! With a thud, it hits the ground, right? And you know what mommy giraffe does? She turns around, she starts nudging it a little bit to encourage it to get up on its legs. And you think Bambi looked bad getting up on its legs, right? When a giraffe, you know, stilts the first time, right? When the giraffe finally, mother nudges it until that baby giraffe gets up on its feet. And as soon as the baby giraffe gets up on its feet, you know what mom does? She kicks that baby and knocks it over so it has to get up on its feet again. And she'll keep doing that until that baby can pop up on its feet the way it's supposed to. He says it's almost a cruel experience to witness. But you know why God made giraffes that way, don't you? Because if that mommy giraffe didn't do that, that baby giraffe's a sitting duck for the lions who are watching that baby be born. It's got to learn, and it's got to learn quick. Get up, stay with the rest of the giraffes. I'm just guessing that the baby has a hard time understanding why my mom's kicking me. And I'm also guessing that the baby at first doesn't realize because mom loves you and wants you to grow. But I'm also guessing that sometimes when things get real tough for us, one of the last things we think about is, this is how much God loves me. And he really wants me to grow. But I really want you to think about that. And I can't think of a better time to think about that than when we come to the tables. Remember how Jesus died so that we could have that life beyond this life. But now, don't ever forget, it's a price he paid because he wants love, and he's actually using this stuff to help us grow. Would you bow your heads? Would you pray when you're ready? Would you come and take one of the cups? Remember the death of Christ for you.
Thanks again for listening to the Brevard Christian Church podcast. We pray you were encouraged and blessed. Want to connect with us? Go to brevardchristian.com and hit the contact us page. We'd love to follow up with you and help you take your next step as we get closer to Him. And until next time, grace and peace to you.